Chapter 65, Lord Balaram visits Vrindavan. Lord Balaram became very anxious to see his father and mother in Vrindavan. Therefore, with great enthusiasm, he started on a chariot for Vrindavan. The inhabitants of Vrindavan had been anxious to see Krishna and Balaram for a very long time. When Lord Balaram returned to Vrindavan, all the cowherd boys and gopis had grown up. But still, on his arrival, they all embraced him, and Balaram embraced them in reciprocation. After this, he came before Maharaj Nanda and Yashoda and offered his respectful obeisances. In response, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj offered their blessings unto him. They addressed him as Jagadishwara, or Lord of the Universe, who maintains everyone. The reason for this was that Krishna and Balaram maintain all living entities. And yet, Nanda and Yashoda were put into such difficulties on account of their absence. Feeling like this, they embraced Balaram and, seating him on their laps, began their perpetual crying, wetting Balaram with their tears. Lord Balaram then offered his respectful obeisances to the elderly, cowherd men, and accepted the obeisances of the younger cowherd men. Thus, according to their different ages and relationships, Lord Balaram exchanged feelings of friendship with them. He shook hands with those who were his equals in age and friendship, and with loud laughing embraced each one of them. After being received by the cowherd men and boys, the gopis and Queen Nanda and Yashoda, Lord Balaram sat down, feeling satisfied, and they all surrounded him. First, Lord Balaram inquired from them about their welfare, and then, since they had not seen him for such a long time, they began to ask him different questions. The inhabitants of Vrindavan had sacrificed everything for Krishna, simply being captivated by the lotus eyes of the Lord. Because of their great desire to love Krishna, they never desired anything like elevation to the heavenly planets or merging into the effulgence of Brahman to become one with the Absolute Truth. They were not even interested in enjoying a life of opulence, but were satisfied in living a simple life in the village as cowherds. They were always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and did not desire any personal benefits for them, and they were all so much in love with him that in his absence their voices faltered when they began to inquire from Balaramji. First, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mayi inquired, "My dear Balaram, are our friends like Vasudev and others in the family doing well? Now you and Krishna are grown up, married men, with children. In the happiness of family life, do you sometimes remember your poor father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi?" Very good news that the most simple King Kamsa has been killed by you, and that our friends like Vasudev and the others, who had been harassed, have now been released. It is also very good news that you and Krishna defeated Jarasandha and Kaliyayavana, who is now dead, and that you are now living in a fortified residence in Dwarka. When the gopis arrived, Lord Balaram glanced over them with loving eyes. Being overjoyed, the gopis, who had so long been mortified on account of Krishna's and Balaram's absence, began to ask about the welfare of the two brothers. They specifically asked Balaram whether Krishna was enjoying his life surrounded by the enlightened women of Dwarka Puri. Does he sometimes remember his father, Nanda, and his mother, Yashoda, and the other friends with whom he so intimately behaved while in Vrindavan? Does Krishna have new plans to come here to see his mother Yashoda And does he remember us soldiers who are now pitiably bereft of his company? Krishna may have forgotten us in the midst of the cultured women of Dwarka, but so far as we are concerned, we still remember him by collecting flowers and sowing them in the garden. When he does not come, however, we simply pass our time by crying. If only he would come here and accept these garlands we have made. Dear Lord Balaram, descendant of Dasharatha, you know that we would give up everything for Krishna's friendship. Even in great distress, one cannot give up the connection of family members, but although it might be impossible for others, we gave up our fathers, mothers, sisters, and relatives. But this Krishna, without caring a pinch for our renunciation, all of a sudden renounced us and went away. He broke off our intimate relationship without serious consideration and left for a foreign country. But he was so clever and cunning that he manufactured very nice words. He said, "My dear ladies, please do not worry. The service you have rendered me is impossible for me to repay. After all, we are women, so how could we disbelieve him? Now we can understand that his sweet words are simply for cheating us." Protesting Krishna's absence from Vrindavan, another gopi said, "My dear Balaramaji, we are, of course, village girls, so Krishna could cheat us in that way, but what about the women of Dwarka? Don't think they are as foolish as we. We village women might be misled by Krishna, but the women of the city of Dwarka are very clever and intelligent. Therefore, I would be surprised if such city women could be misled by Krishna and could believe his words." Then another gopi began to speak. "My dear friend," she said, "Krishna is very clever in using words. No one can compete with him in that art. He can manufacture such colorful words and talk so sweetly that the hearts of any woman, that the heart of any woman would be misled. Besides that, he has perfected the art of smiling very attractively. And by seeing his smile, women become mad at him and give themselves to him without hesitation." Another gopi, after hearing this, said, "My dear friend, what's the use of talking about Krishna? If you are at all interested in passing time by talking, let us talk on some subject other than him. If cruel Krishna can pass his time without us, why can't we pass our time without Krishna? Of course, Krishna is passing his days without us very happily, but we cannot pass our days happily without him." When the gopis were talking in this way, their feelings for Krishna became more and more intense, and they were experiencing Krishna smiling, Krishna's words of love, Krishna's attractive features, Krishna's characteristics, and Krishna's embraces. By the force of their ecstatic feelings, it appeared to them that Krishna was personally present and dancing before them. Because of their sweet remembrance of Krishna, they could not check their tears, and they began to cry without consideration. Lord Balaram, of course, could understand the ecstatic feelings of the gopis, and therefore he wanted to pacify them. He was expert in presenting an appeal and was treating the gopis very respectfully. He began to narrate the story of Krishna so tactfully that the gopis became satisfied. To keep the gopis of Vrindavan satisfied, Lord Balaram stayed there continuously for 2 months, namely the months of Chaitra, March, April, and Vaishakha, April and May. For those 2 months, he kept himself among the gopis, and he passed every night with them in the forest of Vrindavan to satisfy their desires for conjugal love. Balaram also enjoyed the right to dance with the gopis during those 2 months. Since the season was springtime, the breeze on the bank of the Jamuna was blowing very mildly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, especially the flower known as Komali. Moonlight filled the sky and spread everywhere, and thus the banks of the Jamuna appeared very bright and pleasing, and Lord Balaram enjoyed the company of the gopis there. The demigod known as Varuna sent his daughter, Varuni, in the form of liquid honey, oozing from the hollows of the trees. Because of this honey, the whole forest became aromatic, and the sweet aroma of the liquid honey, Varuni, captivated Balaram. Balaramji and all the gopis became very much attracted by the taste of the Varuni, and all of them drank it together. While drinking this natural beverage, no additives. While drinking this natural beverage, all the gopis chanted the glories of Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram felt very happy, as if he had become intoxicated by drinking that Varuni beverage. His eyes rolled in a pleasing attitude. He was decorated with long garlands of forest flowers, and the whole situation appeared to be a great function of happiness because of this transcendental bliss. Lord Balaram smiled beautifully, and the drops of perspiration decorating his face appeared like soothing morning dew. While Balaram was in that happy mood, he desired to enjoy the company of the gopis and the water of the Jamuna. Therefore, he called the Jamuna to come nearby. But the Jamuna neglected the order of Balaramaji, considering him intoxicated. Lord Balaram became very much displeased at the Jamuna's neglecting his order. He immediately wanted to scratch the land near the river with his plowshare. Lord Balaram has two weapons, a plow and a club, from which he takes service when they are required. This time he wanted to bring the Jamuna by force, and he took the help of his plow. He wanted to punish the Jamuna because she did not come in obedience to his order. He addressed the Jamuna, "You wretched river, you did not care for my order. Now I shall teach you a lesson. You did not come to me voluntarily. Now with the help of my plow, I shall force you to come. I shall divide you into hundreds of scattered streams." When the Jamuna was threatened like this, she became greatly afraid of the power of Balaram and immediately came impatient, falling at his lotus feet and praying thus, "My dear Balaram, you are the most powerful personality and you are pleasing to everyone. Unfortunately, I forgot your glorious, exalted position. But now I've come to my senses and I remember that you hold all the planetary systems on your head merely by your partial expansion, Shesha. You are the sustainer of the whole universe. My dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are full with six objects. Because I forgot your omnipotence, I have mistakenly disobeyed your order, and thus I have become a great offender. But, my dear Lord, please know that I am a soul surrendered unto you, who are very affectionate to your devotees. Therefore, please excuse my impudence and mistake, and by your heartless mercy, may you now release me." Upon displaying this submissive attitude, the Jamuna was forgiven. And when she came nearby, Lord Balaram enjoyed the pleasure of swimming in her waters along with the gopis, in the same way that an elephant enjoys himself along with his many she-elephants. After a long time, when Lord Balaram had enjoyed his full satisfaction, he came out of the water, and immediately a goddess of fortune offered him a nice blue garment and a valuable necklace made of gold. After bathing in the Yamuna, Lord Balaram dressed in blue garments and decorated with golden ornaments, looked very attractive to everyone. Lord Balaram's complexion was white, and when he was properly dressed, he looked exactly like the white elephant of King Indra in the heavenly planets. The river Yamuna still has many small branches due to being scratched by the plowshare of Balaram. All these branches of the river Yamuna still glorify the omnipotence of Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram and the gopis enjoy transcendental pastimes together every night for 2 months, and time passed so quickly that all those nights appear to be only one night. In the presence of Lord Balaram, all the gopis and other inhabitants of Vrindavan became as cheerful as they had been before in the presence of both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 65th chapter of Krishna, Lord Balaram, which is Vrindavan. This is the new chapter, 66. The deliverance of Pondaka and the king of Kashi. From love to war. The story of King Pondaka is very interesting because it proves that there have always been many rascals and fools who have considered themselves gods. Even in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, there was such a foolish person. His name was Pondaka. And he wanted to declare himself God. While Lord Balaram was absent in Vrindavan, this King Pondaka, the king of Karusha province, being foolish and puffed up, sent a messenger to Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. King Pondaka directly challenged Krishna through the messenger, who stated that Pondaka, not Krishna, was Vasudeva. In the present day, there are many foolish followers of such rascals. Similarly, in Pondaka's day, many foolish men accepted Pondaka as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he could not estimate his own position. Pondaka falsely thought himself to be Lord Vasudeva. Thus the messenger declared to Krishna that King Pondaka, the Supreme Personality of God, had descended on the earth out of his father's mercy just to deliver all distressed persons. Surrounded by many other foolish persons, the rascal Pondaka had actually concluded that he was Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This kind of conclusion is certainly childish. When children are playing, they sometimes select a king amongst themselves, and the selected child may think that he is actually the king. Similarly, many foolish persons, due to ignorance, select another fool as God. And then the rascal actually considers himself God, as if God could be created by childish power or the votes of men. Under this false impression that he himself was Supreme Lord, Pondaka sent his messenger to Dwarka to challenge the position of Krishna. The messenger reached the royal assembly of Krishna Dwarka and conveyed the message given by his master Pondaka. The message contained the following statements. I am the only Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. No man can compete with me. I have descended as King Pondaka, taking compassion on the distressed conditioned souls out of my unlimited causeless mercy. You, addressing Krishna, you have falsely taken the position of Vasudeva without authority. But you should not propagate this false idea. You must give up your position of descendant of the Yadu dynasty please give up all the symbols of Vasudeva which you have falsely assumed. And after giving up this position, come and surrender unto me. If, out of your gross impudence, you do not care for my words, then I challenge you to fight. I am inviting you to a battle in which the decision will be settled. When all the members of the royal assembly, including King Ugrasena, heard this message sent by Pondraka, they laughed very loudly for a considerable time. After enjoying the loud laughter of all the members of the assembly, Krishna replied to the messenger as follows. O messenger of Pondraka, you may carry my message to your master. You are a foolish vassal. I directly call you a vassal, and I refuse to follow your instructions. I shall never give up the symbols of Vasudeva, especially my disc. I shall use this disc to kill not only you, but all your followers also. I shall destroy you and your foolish associates, who merely constitute a society of cheaters and the cheated. O foolish king, you will then have to conceal your face in disgrace, and when your head is severed from your body by my disc, it will be surrounded by meat-eating birds like vultures, hawks, and eagles. At that time, instead of becoming my shelter, as you have demanded, you will be subjected to the mercy of these low-born birds. At that time, your body will be thrown to dogs, who will eat it with great pleasure. The messenger carried the words of Lord Krishna to his master, Pondraka, who patiently heard all these insults. Without waiting any longer, Lord Sri Krishna immediately started out in his chariot to punish the rascal, Pondraka, the king of Kalusha. Because at that time he was living with his friend, the king of Kashi, Krishna surrounded the whole city of Kashi. King Pondraka was a great warrior, and as soon as he heard of Krishna's attack, he came out of the city with two Akshaugini divisions of soldiers. The king of Kashi also came out with three Akshaugini divisions. When the two kings came before Lord Krishna to oppose him, Krishna saw Pondraka face to face for the first time. Krishna saw that Pondraka had decorated himself with the symbols of the conch shell disc, lotus, and club. He carried an invitation, charanga bow, and on his chest there was a marked insignia of Srivatsa. His neck was decorated with a false Hastuba jewel, and he wore a flower garland in exact imitation of Lord Vasudeva's. He was dressed in yellow silken garments, and the flag on his chariot carried the symbol of Garuda, exactly imitating Krishna's. He had a very valuable helmet on his head, and his earrings, like swordfish, glittered brilliantly. On the whole, however, his dress and makeup were clearly imitation. Anyone could understand that he was just like someone on stage, playing the part of Vasudeva in false dress. When Lord Sri Krishna saw Pondraka imitating his posture and dress, he could not check his laughter, and thus he laughed with great satisfaction. The soldiers on the side of King Pondraka began to shower their weapons upon Krishna. The weapons, including various kinds of pikes, clubs, poles, lances, swords, daggers, and arrows, came flying in waves, and Krishna counteracted them. He smashed not only the weapons, but also the soldiers and assistants of Pondraka, just as during the dissolution of this universe, the fire of devastation burns everything to ashes. the elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry belonging to the opposite party were scattered by the weapons of Krishna. Indeed, the whole battlefield became strewn with smashed chariots and the bodies of men and animals. There were fallen horses, elephants, men, asses, and camels. Although the devastated battlefield appeared to be like the dancing place of Lord Shiva at the time of dissolution of the world, the warriors on the side of Krishna were very much encouraged by seeing this, and they fought with greater strength. I guess we need to pause now. Are we going to keep cutting during our time? No. What? We're going to continue? Okay. You're going to continue to 6:30? Okay. Unless somebody comes here and starts to leave the kirtan probably. So they're just getting to the good part. Well, this will be a good time. At this time, Lord Krishna told Pondrika, Pondrika, you requested me to give up the symbols of Lord Vishnu, specifically my disc. Now I will give it up to you. Be careful. You falsely declare yourself Vasudev in the kingdom. Therefore, no one is a greater fool than you. From the statement of Krishna, it is clear that any rascal who advertises himself as God is the greatest fool in human society. Krishna continues. Now, Pandita, I shall force you to give up this false representation. You wanted me to surrender unto you. Now, this is your opportunity. We shall now fight. And if I am defeated, and you are victorious, I shall certainly surrender unto you. In this way, after chastising Pondrika very sincerely, Krishna smashed Pondrika's chariot to pieces by shooting an arrow. Then, with the help of his disc, he separated Pondrika's head from his body. Just as Indra shaves off the peaks of mountains by slicing them with his thunderbolts. Similarly, Krishna also killed the king of Kachi with his arrows. Lord Krishna specifically arranged to throw the head of the king of Kachi into the city of Kachi itself, so that his relatives and family members could see it. Krishna did this just as a hurricane carries a lotus petal here and there. Lord Krishna killed Pondrika and his friend Kachiraja on the battlefield, and then he returned to his capital city, Dwarka. When Krishna returned to the city of Dwarka, all the cities and the heavenly planets were singing his glories. As far as Pondrika was concerned, somehow or other, he always thought of Lord Vasudeva by falsely dressing himself in imitation of the Lord. Therefore, Pondrika achieved Swarupya, one of the five kinds of liberation, and was thus promoted to the Vaikuntha planets, where the devotees have the same bodily features as Vishnu, with four hands holding the four symbols. Actually, his meditation and concentration on the Vishnu form was concentrated on the Vishnu form, but because he thought himself was Vishnu, it was offensive. But by being killed by Krishna, however, that offense was mitigated. Thus, he was given Swarupya liberation, and he attained the same form as the Lord. When the head of King Kachi was thrown through the city gate, people gathered and were astonished to see that wonderful thing. When they found that there were earrings on it, they could understand that it was someone's head. They conjectured as to who it might be. Some thought it was Krishna's head, because Krishna was the enemy of Kashi Raj, and they calculated that the king of Kashi might have thrown Krishna's head into the city so that people might take pleasure in the enemies having been killed. But they finally detected that the head was not Krishna's, but that of Kashi Raj himself. When this was ascertained, the queen of King Kashi immediately approached and began to lament the death of their husband. "Our dear Lord," they cried, "upon your death we have become just like dead bodies." The king of Kashi had a son whose name was Sudakshina. After observing the ritualistic funeral ceremony, he took a vow that since Krishna was the enemy of his father, he would kill Krishna and in this way liquidate his debt to his father. Therefore, accompanied by a learned priest qualified to help him, he began to worship Mahadev, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, who is also known as Vishwanath, is the Lord of the kingdom of Kashi. The temple of Lord Vishwanath is still existing in Varanasi, and many thousands of pilgrims still gather daily in that temple, now known as Benares. So Kashi is later called Varanasi, now called Benares. Same place. And that is the Vishwanath temple of Lord Shiva. It's still a Mayavadi place too. It comes by the Pongruga and everything. By the worship of Sudakshina, Lord Shiva was very pleased, and he wanted to give a benediction to his devotee. Sudakshina's purpose was to kill Krishna, and therefore he prayed for a specific power by which to kill him. Lord Shiva advised that Sudakshina, assisted by the Brahmanas, execute a ritualistic ceremony for killing one's enemy. This ceremony is also mentioned in some of the countries. Lord Shiva informed Sudakshina that if such a black ritualistic ceremony were performed properly, then the evil spirit named Dakshinadri would appear and then carry out any order given to him. He would have to be employed, however, to kill someone other than a qualified Brahmana. If all these conditions were met, then Dakshinadri, accompanied by Lord Shiva's ghostly companions, would fulfill the desire of Sudakshina to kill his enemy. So here we have some black magic going on. Evil spirit. Okay. The only distinction was he could kill a Brahmin. When Sudakshina was encouraged by Lord Shiva in that way, he was sure that he would be able to kill Krishna. With a determined vow of austerity, he began to execute the black art of chanting mantras, assisted by the priests. After this, out of the fire came a great demoniac form, whose hair, beard, and mustache were exactly the color of hot copper. This form was very big and fierce. As the demon arose from the fire, cinders of fire emanated from the sockets of his eyes. The giant fiery demon appeared still more fierce due to the movements of his eyebrows. He exhibited long, sharp teeth, and sticking out his long tongue, licked his upper and lower lips. After peering from the fire of sacrifice, he stood wielding the trident in his hand. Instigated by Sudarshana, the demon proceeded toward the capital city, Dwarka, with many hundreds of ghostly companions, and it appeared he was going to burn all outer space to ash. The surface of the earth trembled because of his spiking steps. When he entered the city of Dwarka, all the residents panicked, just like animals in the forest fire. At that time, Krishna was playing chess in the Royal Assembly Council Hall. All the residents of Dwarka approached and addressed him, "Dear Lord of the Three Worlds, a great fiery demon is ready to burn the whole city of Dwarka. Please save us." In this way, all the inhabitants of Dwarka appealed to Lord Krishna for protection from the fiery demon who had just appeared in Dwarka to devastate the whole city. Lord Krishna, who specifically protects his devotees, saw that the whole population of Dwarka was most perturbed by the presence of the great fiery demon. He immediately smiled and assured them, "Don't worry, I shall give you all protection. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is all-pervading. He's within everyone's heart, and he is also without, in the form of the cosmic manifestation." He could understand that the fiery demon was a creation of Lord Shiva, and in order to vanquish the demon, he took the Sudarshan Chakra and ordered him to take the necessary steps, that is, the chakra. The Sudarshan Chakra appeared with the effulgence of millions of suns, his feet being as powerful as the fire created at the end of the cosmic manifestation. By his effulgence, the Sudarshan Chakra illuminated the entire universe on the surface of the earth as well as in outer space. Then the Sudarshan Chakra began to freeze the fiery demon created by Lord Shiva. In this way, the fiery demon was checked by the Sudarshan Chakra of Lord Krishna, and being defeated in his attempt to devastate the city of Dwarka, he turned back.
See, one of the stories comes from Marvel Comics. Is the original.
Having failed to set fire to Dwarka, the fiery demon went back to Varanasi, the kingdom of Kansiraj. As a result of his return, all the priests who had helped instruct the black art of mantras, along with their employer, Sudarshana, were burned to ashes by the glaring effulgence of the fiery demon. According to the method of the black art mantras instructed in the Tantra, if the mantra fails to kill the enemy, then, because it must kill someone, it kills the original creator. Sudarshana was the originator, and the priest assisted him. Therefore, all of them were burned to ashes. This is the way of the demons. The demons create something to kill God, but by the same weapon, the demons themselves are killed. Following, just behind the fiery demon, is Sudarshan Chakra, also entered Varanasi. The city had been very opulent and great for a very long time. Even now, the city of Varanasi is opulent and famous, and it is one of the important cities of India. There were then many big palaces, assembly houses, marketplaces engaged with large and very important monuments by the palaces and gates. Lecturing platforms could be found at each and every crossroads. There were buildings that housed the treasury, elephants, horses, chariots, and grains, and places for the distribution of food.
the city of Varanasi had been filled with all these material opulences for a very long time. But because the king of Kashi and his son, Sudarshana, were against Lord Krishna, the Vishnu Chakra, Sudarshan, his cousin of Lord Krishna, devastated the whole city by burning all these important places. This excursion was more ravaging than modern bombing. The Sudarshan Chakra, having thus finished his duty, came back to his Lord Sri Krishna. This narration of the devastation of Varanasi by Krishna's displeasure in Sudarshan Chakra is transcendental and auspicious. Just in case you're wondering, it's transcendental and auspicious. Anyone who narrates or reads the story with faith and attention will be released from all reactions to sinful activities. This is the assurance of Sri Deva Swami who narrated the story to Prince Manaraj, such in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 66th chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of Pongraha and the king of Kashi. Yeah.
Are we
allowed
to ask questions
now? Yeah.
The fact that Pongraha was saying there's this category of Vasudeva that I'm also laying claim to. Does that suggest that beyond the fact that Krishna is the son of Vasudeva, there's this kind of sense of godhood that even before Krishna's incarnation was called Vasudeva?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, because even before Krishna appeared, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Oh, Dhruva Maharaj changed that, right? Dhruva Maharaj?
Yeah. But it's also Krishna's patronymic. Chapter 67, The Deliverance of Vidadas Gorilla. Another Balaram story. His appearance there is coming up that time. Vasudeva Swami continued to speak on the transcendental pastimes and characteristics of Lord Krishna. King Parikshit, upon hearing them, became more and more enthusiastic and wanted to hear further. Sukadeva Swami next narrates the story of Sivada, the gorilla who was killed by Lord Balaram. This gorilla, and here's the origin of King Kong, this gorilla, who was a great friend of Bhaumasura, or Narakasura, who had been killed by Krishna in connection with his kidnapping 16,000 princesses from all over the world. Dhruvada was the minister of King Sugriva. His brother, Mainda, was also a very powerful gorilla king. When Dhruvada gorilla heard the story of his friend, Bhaumasura, being killed by Lord Krishna, he planned to create mischief throughout the country in order to avenge the death of Bhaumasura. His first business was to set fires in villages, towns, and industrial and mining places, as well as in the residential quarters of the mercantile men who were busy dairy farming and protecting cows. Sometimes he would uproot a big mountain and tear it to pieces. In this way he created a great disturbance all over the country, especially in the province of Kathuwar. The city of Dwarka was situated in this Kathuwar province, and because Lord Krishna used to live in this city,
driven us, specifically made it his target of disturbance. Vrindavan was as powerful as 10,000 elephants. Sometimes he would go to the seashore, and with his powerful hands, he would create so much disturbance in the sea that he would flood the neighboring cities and villages. Often he would go to the hermitages of great saintly persons and sages and cause a great disturbance by smashing their beautiful gardens and orchards. Not only did he create disturbances in that level, but sometimes he would pass urine and stool on their sacred sacrificial arenas. He would thus pollute the whole atmosphere. He also kidnapped both men and women, taking them away from their residential places to the caves of the mountains. After putting them within the caves, he would close their entrances with a large chunk of stone, like the greedy insect. I think I read about this insect somewhere. Cat captures bugs and puts them in his burrow and keeps them there for later digestion. Those greedy insects, which arrests and carries away and declines other insects and puts them within the hole in the trees where they live. Thus, Duda regularly defeats the fire. Duda regularly defies the law and order of the country. Not only that, he would sometimes pollute the female members of many aristocratic families by forcibly raping them. So an all around bad guy. He's a real condition. By creating such great disturbances all over the country, sometimes he heard very beautiful sounds from right up at the mountain. And so he entered that mountainous region. There he saw Lord Balaram in the midst of many beautiful young girls, enjoying their company while singing and dancing. He became captivated by the beauty of Lord Balaram's body, whose every feature was very beautiful, decorated as he was with a garland of lotus flowers. Similarly, all the young girls present, dressed in garlands and flowers, exhibited much beauty. Lord Balaram seemed fully intoxicated from drinking the bubbling beverage, and his eyes appeared to be rolling in a drunken state. Lord Balaram appeared just like the king of elephants in the midst of many yellows. This gorilla, by the name of Vrindavan, could climb up into the trees and would jump from one branch to another. Sometimes he would jerk the branches, creating a particular type of sound, hila hila, so that Balaram was greatly distracted from the pleasing atmosphere. Sometimes Vrindavan would come before the women and exhibit different types of caricatures. By nature, young women are apt to enjoy everything with laughter and joking. And when the gorilla came before them, they did not take him seriously, but simply laughed at him. However, the gorilla was so rude that even in the presence of Balaram, he began to show the lower part of his body to the women. And sometimes he would come forward to show his teeth while moving his eyebrows. He in his perspective, but we're even in the presence of Balaram. Lord Balaram's name suggests not only that he is very powerful, but that he takes pleasure in exhibiting extraordinary strength. So he took a stone and threw it to him. The gorilla, however, artfully avoided being struck by the stone. In order to insult Balaram, the gorilla took away the earthen pot in which the Varuni was kept. Dvivida, thus being intoxicated with his limited strength, began to tear off all the valuable clothes worn by Balaram to accompany young girls. He was so puffed up that he thought Balaram could not do anything to chastise him. And he continued to offend Balaramji and his companions. When Lord Balaram saw the disturbances created by the gorilla and heard that he had already performed many mischievous activities all over the country, he became very angry and decided to kill him. Immediately he took his gloves in hands. The gorilla could understand that now Balaram was going to attack him. To counteract Balaram, he immediately uprooted a big oak tree. And with great force, he came and struck Lord Balaram's head. Lord Balaram, however, immediately caught hold of the big tree and remained undisturbed, just like a great mountain. To retaliate, he took his club named Sulanda and hit the gorilla with it, severely injuring his head. Currents of blood flowed from the gorilla's head with great force, but the stream of blood simply enhanced his beauty, like a stream of liquid mandarins coming out of a great mountain. Suppose it refers to a volcanic eruption. The striking of Balaram's club did not even slightly disturb him. On the contrary, he immediately uprooted another big oak tree, and after clipping off all its leaves, again struck Balaram's head with it. But Balaram, with the help of his club, tore the tree to pieces. Since the gorilla was very angry, he took another tree in his hands and struck Lord Balaram's body. Again, Lord Balaram tore the tree to pieces. And the fighting continued. Each time, the gorilla would bring out a big tree to strike Balaram. Lord Balaram would tear the tree to pieces by the striking of his club. And the gorilla would clutch another tree from another direction and again attack Balaram in the same way. As a result of this continuous fighting, the forest became treeless. When no more trees were available, Dvivida took help from the hills and threw large pieces of stone, like rainfall, upon the body of Balaram. Lord Balaram, in a great sporting mood, began to smash those big pieces of stone into mere pebbles. This is the origin of the game known as baseball. One of which sports comes from heavy things. The gorilla, being bereft of all trees and stone slabs, now stood before Balaram and waved his strong fists. Then with great force he began to beat Lord Balaram's chest with his fists. This time, Lord Balaram became most angry. Since the gorilla was striking him with his hands, Lord Balaram would not strike him back with his own weapons, the club or the plow. Simply with his fist, he struck the collarbone of the gorilla This load proved fatal to Sundar, who immediately vomited blood and fell unconscious upon the ground. When the gorilla fell, all the hills and forests appeared to talk. After this horrible incident, all the siddhas, great sages, and sacred persons from the upper planetary system showered flowers on the person of Lord Balaram and vibrated sounds glorifying his supremacy. All of them chanted, "All glories to Lord Balaram. Let us offer our respectful obeisances to your lotus feet. By killing this great demon, Drupada, you have initiated an auspicious era for the world." All such jubilant sounds of victory were heard from outer space. After killing the great demon, Drupada, and being worshipped by showers of flowers and glorious sounds of victory, Balaram returned to his capital city, Dwarka. And since the Bhagavad Gita, purport of the 66th chapter of this one, the deliverance of Vibhada the Rebel. Now a love story. Chapter 68, the marriage of Samba. Duryodhana. You going to keep on going or what? I'm sorry?
She said maybe it's an apple point to break off now.
You want to break now?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good idea. Guru Prabhupada.